behind the wheel, under the hood, and beyond with Car Stuff from HowStuffWorks.com.
All right, that's my fourth cup of coffee. Welcome to the show. I'm Ben.
And I'm Scott. This is, this might be an interesting program.
You know, I could just say I was excited about this before I came in. Noel's here, too. Noel just waved, yep. So we're on good terms with him.
You going to be a little jittery today, maybe, with all that coffee?
Maybe.
Yeah?
Maybe. But that's good, because we're talking about something fascinating today. It's always kind of fascinating to me, but I guess that's why we're on the show together. We're talking not about cars of the past. We've done episodes about that. Not about great moments in car history or innovations or what-if questions. We are talking about the future.
Yeah, some of the most anticipated cars, I guess, of 2016 to about 2019. We might mm-hmm. even stretch that into 2020. Mm-hmm. I've got a couple that I want to add to this list anyways. But the cars that people are excited about, genuinely thinking like, this is coming down the road. Manufacturers have said, we're going to build this car, but we're going to wait about 3 or 4 years before we actually put it in your hands, or at least on the showroom floor, and maybe try to use that time to drum up some excitement about the car. And I think we'll talk about one case in particular where I think, personally, that is failing miserably, but maybe that's a talk for a little bit later.
Well, if we have time for a tangent by way of context at the front, this is something I wanted to ask you about.
All right.
So for the past few years, You and I and Noel, we watch movies. We see movies.
Sure.
For the past few years, when I am finally dragged to a theater to pay full price for a movie ticket, one thing that gets me is that trailers for films are coming out earlier and earlier and earlier.
Okay.
It bugs the hell out of me. Pardon my French. I don't want you to tell me about a film that's coming out 4 years from now.
Yeah.
And then what am I supposed to do with that?
Yeah, it's like coming in summer of 2018.
Right.
And you can clearly see that they haven't even shot a frame of video of a film.
Yeah, it's like a logo just pops up. Summer 2018.
Okay, stop me if I've told you this.
What's that?
There was a movie recently. What was the movie with Sandra Bullock and George Clooney?
Gravity,
okay. Years and years prior to Gravity, there was a trailer that was so nondescript. I mean, it was just like you're out in the middle of space. The screen starts black screen, right?
Yeah, yeah.
You pan across something, you see a little bit of a light flare in the lens, like the blackness of space, right?
Mm-hmm.
It gets to some point, I don't even know if it was like a spaceship or what it was, maybe like a portal window or something, and I'm just remembering this from, again, long time ago.
Yeah, yeah.
It gets to that point, and then it cuts. Like, that's the end of the whole thing, the whole trailer. And it says, like, Gravity coming, whenever it was. It was like summer of 2015 or
sure.
It was. Yep. Some lady in front of me goes, oh, I can't wait to see that.
Well, you're going to have to.
But there's nothing that leads you to believe that it's anything more than just a movie about space and it's got George Clooney in it. That's it. That's
maybe
the whole
thing.
That's
all she needed.
I guess, but she was super, like, super, super excited about it. And I was thinking, I laughed in the, I was kind of chuckling to myself, like, what? Mm. What did she see in that trailer that I didn't see? And we see that often with automobiles, I guess, Ben.
Yes, because now more and more we're seeing the same marketing stuff where it used to be, wow, this car just came out and look at these amazing reviews. And now it's supposed to be, wow, in 4 years, we're hoping this car comes out and, oh, it's going to be so great.
Yeah. Well, to some extent, we're seeing this, from Audi and Mercedes-Benz and all these other manufacturers that say, we're going to put this system into our car. You know, the self-driving systems
sure.
and self-parking and the valets and all that stuff.
Yeah.
We're going to put those in and it's going to be 10 years from now. So it's going to be in, 2025 when it comes out. But here's what we're promising. And that's a long, long time to wait. But we're talking specifically today about full vehicles, like the full thing that, they're showing you a show car or a prototype, or maybe just more often than not now, it seems like they're releasing renderings to Car and Driver and Road and Track and some of the big automobile magazines.
And even in some cases, estimated specs for a vehicle that does not yet exist.
Yeah. And again, we're going to make this in 8 years and it's going to be great. You're going to love it, but What happens between now and the, you know, that 8 year, you know, promised production date?
Yeah, that's a great question.
Does it change dramatically? Because often it does. It changes a lot. You know,
often it gets pushed back further.
Yeah, or they realize that there's some kind of problem with the technology that they have right now that can't be implemented into it that they thought they could, you know, hold on to for that full 8 years.
Like the Chevy Volt.
Yeah, like Volkswagen TDI.
Yeah, okay.
That happens. You know, stuff like that happens along the way. In fact, one of the examples that we're going to read today, I mean, okay, I don't even know if I should mention it right now. Let's just, when we get to it, you'll know when we get to it.
No spoilers, but I will say as we're moving into this list, we're going to talk about some of the most anticipated cars of the coming year or two immediately, but then it goes all the way out a little bit further. But I will say I think it's more understandable. It feels less unfair to me when a car manufacturer says, here's what we're working on. When Audi says, here's this autonomous system we want to put in over time, I get it because I know that the entire time there are people working assiduously on this. They would not say, okay.
They would not put out a false finish line for themselves.
Right. At the risk of sounding like a jerk to Hollywood. Because, you know, Atlanta is turning into a big film city and a lot of people work there and employed, blah, blah, blah. I feel like I'm saying some version of some of my best friends are, but I mean it, Scott. I mean it. It just, for some reason, what is offensive and irking and irritating to me when the film industry does it is crazy exciting when car manufacturers do it because I feel like I'm still going to care about the vehicle. There's actually going to be a car.
It's a glimpse of the future is what it is because you're going to actually see that. You're going to see the fruits of their labors, I guess. It's going to happen in 5 years, but you're going to remember back to the point when you heard about it first, you saw it first on the auto show circuit or read about it in a magazine or, you know, whatever the case may be. You were browsing through your phone and you saw a photo of it and you thought, you know what? In 5 years, maybe that's the car for me. Maybe I'll start saving right now for that thing because you know it's coming down the pike. It's going to happen. Mm-hmm. But what about manufacturers that? And this is you know along the same lines.
Sure,
I guess.
Sure.
Some manufacturers do this to the point where they say, you know, we're going to promise this in like you know 2017, 2018. So it's a couple years out from right now. That's fine.
Yeah.
But what happens when someone says something like, "This is the model we're going to bring out in 2027." And it's going to be amazing. It's going to be the most fantastic thing you've ever seen, but that's 11 years from now. So what are you going to do along the way to keep that momentum, keep that excitement up about that coming vehicle? I mean, you got to have stuff along the way. You can't wait 11 years to release a new model.
That's true. They're pushing it.
Yeah, there's incremental steps along the way that have to be made, but they're saying, wait till you see this big jump we're going to make in 10 years from now.
I'm all for it. Deferred gratification, mm-hmm. but this is starting to get ridiculous. Well, let's jump into some that are happening sooner.
Yeah, these are a lot sooner. These are definitely on the way. These are ones that have tremendous potential to be here, but there are some things along the way that could go wrong, and these are pointed out in the article as well, because we're following along with an article from Car and Driver, and this is important when we talk about one in specific, but it was written in May of 2015. So it's very recent. You know, it's not that long ago, a couple months ago.
Yeah.
But it does kind of spell out, what is it, 20, well, it's 25 vehicles that are worth waiting for, between the next, three or four model years?
Yeah.
2016 to 2019. And, you know what? I keep hinting at this, but we'll get to it at the end. But, there's something that may have changed for one manufacturer.
That's true.
Well, maybe not. I think they're on the right side of this whole thing.
All right.
Okay.
We'll see when we come to it.
All right.
And some of our more prescient listeners already know what we're going to be talking about, I imagine.
I think so.
All right.
So where do you want to start, Ben?
Let's start with the 2017 Ford GT.
Okay. Okay. Do I need to say this right off the bat? I think I should.
Say
we're going to do this, but a lot of these cars are going to be like supercars. Some of them, you know, because these are the ones that people are just dying to see for whatever reason.
Yeah.
But they're not necessarily the ones that are going to grace your garage. Now,
that's true.
I'm going to do my best to add in a few of the ordinary type vehicles along the way. And there's a few here that kind of fit that.
Well,
but I didn't mean to rain on your parade or anything, Ben, but I'm excited about the Ford GT as well, but knowing that it's not going to, you know, be parked on the right side of the garage of my house anytime soon.
I mean, it's going to be, they're not going to make very many of them. Of course, it's going to be a supercar.
Yeah.
It's going to cost more than $400,000.
That's why it won't be in my garage.
That's why. Yeah.
That's the only reason, because it's a beautiful car.
But the stats are good. 3.5 liter twin turbo V6, and you can talk a little bit about the horsepower, right?
Yeah, definitely. I think we had talked about horsepower ratings back in a previous episode. Sports cars, right?
Yeah.
We were talking about sports cars. And they say that the road car version of this is going to have 650 horsepower. I think I had said 680 in that episode, mm-hmm. but it's actually 650. And, of course, you know, the track car is going to have way, way more than that. It's going to be, you know, pushing 1,000 or more than that, probably. 7-speed dual-clutch transmission. You mentioned that it's a 3.5-liter twin-turbo V6, which seems kind of small, but you got to remember that this is taken directly from Ford's Daytona-winning IMSA prototype sports car racer.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a fantastic engine. This whole package is really nice. It's just, again, $400,000. And they're taking a different approach with this one, Ben.
Mm-hmm.
They're going right straight to what they need for the track day capabilities, you know, what they need to race mm-hmm. at Le Mans.
Yeah, its first and foremost obligation is to be an excellent track car.
Yeah, so going back to what they had done in 2005 with the Ford GT then, they had made a scale model version of it, I guess, is what was on the street. It was a bigger car. It was a 13/10 scale model of what the original track cars were.
Mm-hmm.
So this one is just going to be itself. It's just going to be the track day car. It's going to be what you're going to ride in on the road, if you're so fortunate.
You know what? That's a fair point, Scott. Let's move to a car that's not necessarily a supercar. What you got?
What do I have?
Yeah.
How about this one? The 2017 Ram Rampage. Now, this is a front-wheel drive small pickup truck that's based on the Dodge Dakota. And what's most interesting to me about this, Ben, is this is calling back an old name that they used back in the 1980s. You remember the Plymouth Scamp and Dodge Rampage from the early 80s? I think it was 82 to 84. Those were based on the Omni and Horizon cars. This is considerably bigger, but it's kind of like an entry level for the Ram brand now. So if you want a Dodge Ram truck, but maybe can't afford, you know, some of the bigger models that they're putting out, they're getting pretty expensive. This may be your best option. The pricing right now, what they're thinking for 2017 will be somewhere around like $17,000. That's a maybe price.
Right.
That always tends to go up over the years, you know, for, research and development and stuff like that. But, it's a relatively small engine, a 1.4 liter turbocharged engine. And they also have a naturally aspirated 2.4 liter engine and a 6-speed manual and a 9-speed automatic gearbox is possible in this. Now, I'm not a big fan of a 9-speed automatic in a pickup truck, but
It
doesn't sound like that's going to be geared all that great. But what are the odds that this is really going to be used as a pickup truck? It's a very small bed. It has kind of a like a Subaru Brat appearance to it.
Yeah, it's based on the Fiat Strada, right?
Yeah, Fiat truck. Now, that makes sense because Fiat makes a lot of great commercial vehicles. So why not base a small pickup in the Ram line on the Fiat since, you know, FCA – that's kind of their thing. That's their wheelhouse.
Got a couple cons, though.
What are the cons?
They're not out of the woods yet. Con number one, with the current price of gasoline, people aren't as incentivized to find smaller pickups that get better fuel efficiency because it's not necessarily going to break your wallet at the pump anymore.
Okay, that's right. Now, so what's going to be happening in 2017?
See, that's the question.
Well, that's the gamble, right? That's the gamble that they take in that. So are they going to stuff a larger engine under the hood? Maybe. Maybe that's a possibility.
Yeah.
But if fuel prices go up, they're going to be in a good spot.
Yeah, but yes, exactly. If they get through development and really have this happen, because again, you know, the biggest con to this is that the CEO of Ram Trucks isn't really into it.
Yeah. And so if you got somebody at the top who's, as they say in the article, resisting the idea of this whole thing, it doesn't look too good for them. But, you know, again, every one of these vehicles that we'll talk about today, there's a what could go wrong category. And that's probably the biggest what could go wrong in this case. So watch potentially for the 27 Ram Rampage in a showroom near you soon. Boy, it sounds like I'm selling them.
It does sound
it does. But, you know, I'm kind of interested to see this one. I wonder what size it's going to be. When you look at it, are you going to think, oh, man, that's small? Or are you going to think, like, well, that's just an average pickup truck size? I mean, but they say it's based on the Dodge Dakota, so roughly that size, small pickup?
Yeah.
Yeah, I guess. I don't know.
I don't think it would be too bad.
Maybe if they don't park it next to, you know, full-size Ram. Maybe that would do it.
Yeah, maybe it's just the side-by-side comparison
tell you something? My wife recently got a newer vehicle. We think we've talked about this.
Yeah,
she was originally looking for a Jeep Wrangler, and we ended up with a Renegade. And Renegade, oh my God, that's a small vehicle. Very small. And the thing is, of course, they had to have it parked right next to a couple of Wranglers in the lot that had the giant wheels and the lift kits and all that,
brand new
right from the aftermarket stuff, you know.
Uh-huh.
And so when we get in this thing, it looks like just a toy that's parked next to the Wranglers that she really wanted, but you know, decided, well, that monthly payment was going to be a little too much. So we went with this Renegade, and I don't know. I mean, a few months into it now, I'm not entirely convinced that she's all that happy with her decision. I think she would have been happier with the Wrangler.
Oh,
and she's made a few little comments here and there, and it wasn't my decision at all. It was all her decision. But I think she's maybe second guessing what she decided was important to her when she was at the dealership that day. And I know it's tough, but it's a bitter pill to swallow, but, that's tough. You're into, a few months into a 3-year lease, and you're not exactly happy with your vehicle? Yeah.
Might be
looking at the buyback plans pretty soon.
Man, I mean, it can be rough, you know. It's an expensive and important purchase anytime you get a car.
It is, yeah. But I thought it was kind of the similar thing. Like, it was parked right next to a vehicle that made it look like just a minuscule little vehicle. And it really is small.
Mm-hmm.
But it was, I guess, accentuated by where they put it on the lot. And hopefully they won't do that with a Rampage, you know, smart enough to do that.
Well, let's move on.
Yeah. Sorry for the sidebar.
No, hey man, I'm sorry. Because time is relative, right?
Well, we'll see. Maybe she'll grow more fond of it over the months.
Yeah, who knows?
We'll
maybe,
see.
Maybe by the time that the lease expires and she's made her peace with it, she will move on to a 2018 Land Rover Defender.
Ah. Now, wouldn't that be funny? Because the car that she traded in was a Honda Element. And when you look at the 2018 Land Rover Defender, what do you think of?
I think of an Element.
It looks just like the Element. Come on, that's almost identical.
Yeah.
That's like they went to the Honda drawing board and said, here's what we're doing. Okay, that's a little too much. Maybe
it's
I shouldn't have said that. Now, don't write angry letters telling me that it's nothing like it, but it does, if you squint, it sure looks a lot like an Element.
Well, here's the weird thing. Because for what, 30 plus years, it's been, the Land Rover has pretty much had the same design with a couple of tweaks.
Yeah, it's been very, very similar all along.
And, the Defender, of course, is returning to the U.S. after 20 something years.
Yeah.
But they have a very different design approach.
Sure.
Which some people say looks like the Honda Element, but by some people, probably mean us.
And that's my own thing.
You know, I said though, and I'm not going to back down from this. I still don't really like the way the Honda Element looks. I get that it's big inside.
Mm-hmm.
I get that people enjoy that it's spacious and people who drive it seem to like it, but I see them on the road and I'm not thrilled.
I you know what? I have to agree with you. It was a very capable vehicle because of the interior space and,
mm-hmm.
you know, what it was used for in my family.
Mm-hmm.
You know, carrying a couch when we needed to or carrying a bunch of, luggage to my parents' house when we were traveling on holidays or something like that. So it was very, it was very capable, I guess. It had a lot of space and it was very, a good utility vehicle. That's the best way to put it. It didn't have, fantastic looks or anything like that, but it was very practical. And, I'm guessing that, you know, this you're buying for a little bit more flash because it's not quite as plain on the outside. As the element would be. It does look pretty good. It's got a 5-liter V8 and a 3-liter V6 possibility, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I think there's even an option of a 2-liter inline 4-cylinder.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know. There's a lot of options to this one. If it's your kind of thing, if you like, you know, boxy vehicles like that, this is going to be, again, also a very capable vehicle. It's going to have, some competition in the market, I guess, between
Wrangler, of course.
Well, yeah, the Wrangler, and it's funny they lump in the '90s Defender models and restored Ford Broncos and Harvester Scouts. So it gives you an idea of what this thing looks like,
right?
Of course, Mercedes-Benz G-Class vehicles as well. So
sure.
Some of the modern stuff as well. But it's an interesting looking car, as are all these, Ben. I mean, it's up to you. It's what you like, really.
Well, yeah. I mean, also, in this case, it's a It's a $55,000 decision at the very, very basic. No bells, minus whistles.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, again, 2017, 2018 model, $55,000.
Projected now.
Well,
that's probably going to change.
That'll probably inch its way up to 65, you know, when it arrives.
Sure.
But, take a look at it and see if that type of vehicle is worth it to you for that type of price. All right. So Ben, let's move on to something decidedly different here. I've got another one for you here.
All right.
Maybe we can talk about, the 2017 Corvette Zora ZR1.
Ooh.
Now, what clearly the most fascinating part about this whole thing, Ben, I think you already know this, right?
Yeah. It's a mid-engine.
Yeah, mid-engine Corvette. And this is what people have been super excited about for decades, really. I mean, there have been some concepts along the way, right, that have had mid-engines.
Sure, but nothing really panned out.
No, and this is named for Zora Arkus Dunthoff, who is the Belgian-American engineer who is considered the father of the Corvette. And so that's the Zora part of this whole thing. But looking at the design of this thing, it's not too difficult to see how they came up with, you know, what they did eventually decide on here. I mean, this is a rendering, obviously, of what it's going to look like. But I don't know. It seems like for, 50 years, people have been talking about a mid-engine vet, and it's not too much of a stretch to see what they've come up with based on the current model.
Yeah, it makes sense. And you can see so many different instances of the rendering. Car and Driver has a really great 360 degree one.
Mm-hmm.
There are some definite advantages to having the mid-engine if it works out. But also one thing that makes me, like I believe when you say it's happening, but one thing that leaves me with some questions is people are still speculating about some of the specs, you know?
Yeah, that's true. And you know exactly what's going to power this whole thing. They're talking about initially, they may fit it with the small block V8, and the idea is that it will have to, in some way, top that Hellcat from Dodge.
Yeah.
And, I mean, I don't think there's even a question about that. It's going to have more horsepower than the Hellcat. So more than 707 horsepower, because you can't, you know, throw out a new vet like this with mid-engine and then not beat a sedan.
You have to come correct.
Yeah, Dodge sedan, right? Exactly right. So the idea is that maybe initially a small block V8, and then later, they may fit it with a, like a dual overhead cam V8 or a twin turbo V6 possibly. Something that'll keep it in the, Acura NSX, realm, I guess, you know, if you want to, compare it to something, or the BMW i8, you know, cars that would, I guess be considered competition in that market.
Do you think the 2017 model is going to arrive by the end of the year?
You know
though?
What? I'm going to say, here's my guess. It's going to be delayed. I think it'll be delayed because of, you know, they're going to say whatever it is, you know, it's
development.
Probably cost. It'll come down to cost, but are they going to say that? Because I think it's expensive to develop something like this. I'm sure it is. And they're talking about a starting sticker price of somewhere around $150,000 right now. So decidedly more for this Corvette. But you know what? It's not so far above, like, you know, what previous ZR1 models sold for. So it's not really all that bad. But I mean, again, that's about twice what a standard Corvette costs.
What you have to remember with that price tag, though, is ideally, if it works out, blue sky, whatever, wind at your back, ideally, what you're doing is paying the same price you would, or a comparable price for a Porsche 911 Turbo, but you're getting a performance of a Ferrari 458.
Ah, good point. Yeah. So this is like a world supercar, really. You're getting for about $150,000. It's pretty amazing, really. And as they say here in this article, that, you know, people that are going to take note of this vehicle, it's a pretty interesting lineup of cars. Your Audi, BMW, Jaguar, Lamborghini, Porsche, of course, Mercedes, AMG. They're all going to say, like, well, this car is now kind of performing in the realm of our vehicles, you know, our top-end vehicles, you know, the world supercars, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
Again, low-volume production is expected, so that's another thing to consider, that, you know, they're going to be just a few of them out there to buy, not a whole lot. You know, it's going to be probably one of those slow dealer release things where, you know, everybody gets one at first. Like the Hellcat, you know, those vehicles,
exactly.
Like that type of thing, or the Copo Camaros, you know, the drag racing Camaros. Interesting to watch. So hopefully, I'm hoping that in 2017, we do start to see these mid-engine Corvettes come out.
Yeah, hope springs eternal. I'm all about some optimism. Scott, I know we don't want to make this entirely about supercars, but there's one supercar that I really, really want to get on air.
What's that?
It's It's the Bugatti.
Oh, yeah. We've got to talk about the Bugatti right now. This is the Chiron, right?
Mm-hmm. The 2017 Bugatti Chiron.
Yeah.
The replacement for the Veyron, which has won several different titles, right? One of the fastest production cars. Also one of the most expensive.
Be careful in this realm because if you say the most or the fastest or the best, you know what happens.
I said one of.
yeah, very clear. Okay, that's good. You made it clear. But they did find a way to really, really up the horsepower on this thing.
Mm-hmm.
1,500 horsepower and an expected price tag of $2.5 million. Now we'll get past these million-dollar supercars in just a minute, but this one does need a mention. They're saying that this one may reach a speed of 288 miles per hour.
Yeah, and compare that to the 258 mile per hour Veyron 16.4 Supersport.
I know on paper it doesn't sound like a whole lot, you know, that 30 extra miles per hour, but just consider what it takes to push a car from 258 up to 288. That's a lot of horsepower and a lot of aerodynamics and, adjustable downforce, surfaces in play there. It takes a lot to get this car to do that. And, it's very impressive with the whole package that they put together for this thing. But again, $2.5 million, give or take. Wow, that's expensive. Now, is it dramatically different from the Veyron? I mean, you can look at it and say that it's not really that much different looking, but, I don't know. I guess maybe in a side by side, There's a significant amount of things that are updated or changed or reworked or massaged in some way.
Tweaked.
Yeah, I mean, it's its own vehicle, I get it, but it's pretty similar looking to the Veyron.
And it's also, clearly, it's not a car that a lot of people are going to buy.
Yeah, well, clearly, yeah. I do like this kind of wraparound windshield look. It almost looks like the visor of a motorcycle helmet or something. When you look at it from above, you know, and front.
To me, it's just more interesting because I want to see how far the Veyron aesthetic can be carried. Mm-hmm. I want to see how far this envelope can be pushed.
Well, sure. They've got like an exposed engine now. And we talked about the intakes and all the kind of crazy, supercar features that you find on cars that are $2.5 million that, you're not going to see on a normal car. That's what makes these really fascinating is like the level of detail that they go to on these. And maybe I haven't seen anything of the interior yet, but I'm going to guess it's like one of those quilted leather interiors that looks so cool.
Handmade by some, master of leather working and.
Heck, Ben, even the keys to these things look amazing when you see them. Like, whatever they do with the key fob, if there is a key fob.
The keys were forged in the heart of Mordor.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah, exactly. So, I mean, it's interesting to talk about these things, but you got to understand, that's not the car that everybody's going to be looking for in 2017 as far as like actually putting one in your driveway.
Yeah, to me, that car, I do anticipate it, but I anticipate it more the way that I would anticipate the construction of the CERN Super Collider or, works of art at a museum.
Well, how about this? Let's move on to something that's a little bit more in the realm of the ordinary. And by ordinary, I still mean fantastic because Alfa Romeo is kind of making a revival, a comeback here in the United States.
Yeah.
And one of the cars on this list is not the 4C that we've seen in very limited numbers so far on the road. In fact, the only one I've seen in the wild is at that Rally North America event that we went to for the drag strip.
Mm-hmm.
And that was kind of an oddball then because it was like one of only two cars that had been sold in, I think, all of South Carolina at the time. So, again, like, what was it saying? Like, it's rare as a hen's tooth or something like that, right? this one is probably going to be a little bit more out there, a little more abundant on the roads.
Yes.
And this is the 2017 Alfa Romeo Giulia sedan. And I hope I'm saying that right. But it's a sedan from Alfa Romeo that's finally going to be available in the United States. Now, the rest of the world may not care much about that because they've had Alphas for a long time.
Yeah, but we're pumped. We're stoked.
We are because it's been a long, long time. Now, this is part of, again, FCA's revitalization of, like the Fiat brand and Alfa, which is under that whole umbrella. But it's like a $6 billion Alfa Romeo push here in the United States. So this is one of the cars that's coming out. There's others that are coming as well, but this happens to be the next one that we'll see.
They're going straight into the firefight because this is a $40,000 sporty sedan, which means that there are a wealth of companies already trying to eat a piece of that pie.
Yeah, very smart on their part to price it right around the $40,000 mark, right?
Right, yeah.
Because they could add a bunch of extra crap to it and make it very, very expensive because this is Alfa Romeo.
Right.
I mean, they could throw any engine they want into that thing and make it, you know, a different version of it, but they're smart to bring this entry-level vehicle that I say entry-level, it's $40,000, it's still kind of expensive, but looking at the price of a typical sedan these days, that's
in the ballpark.
Exactly right. That's not that far away. So
what do you get for it?
Well, let's see. What you get for that is you get a turbocharged 2-liter inline 4-cylinder engine or a possibility of a 3-liter V6 and potential for a range of diesel engines. Now, I know we've heard a lot of bad things about diesel right now, but so far, they're not involved in any kind of scandal.
Oh, you're talking about Volkswagen.
Yeah, about Volkswagen. But far, the Alfa's kept its nose clean.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Fiat and Chrysler and all those. So far.
And you can check out some stuff on the Volkswagen controversy. I think we've mentioned it a couple times here, but not in too much detail.
Yeah, right, Ben. Oh, you mean on car stuff.
Yeah.
Because and I have talked about it in length. Or at length, rather,
yeah,
on other shows.
On other shows, we've talked about it on Forward Thinking, and you talked about it on Tech Stuff.
Yeah, that's right. You and I did a two-part Forward Thinking episode on this whole thing. That's why, if people are wondering why we've kind of neglected that whole thing here at Car Stuff, it's because we've been guest hosting on other shows that were also interested in it that tied in as well. So
yeah,
we haven't been completely ignoring it. And there's a lot of information from us.
We've done the opposite of ignoring it. I feel like I know too much now.
Well, you know, maybe that's it. We stick to some of the other stuff here for our own show, but we felt like, they were asking us about that, and we figured, well, we'll just use our diesel knowledge somewhere else at this point.
And right? Then it feels weird to come into our own show, to go into our own house podcast-wise and do the same thing again.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, it would be kind of silly.
But anyway, yeah, as you pointed out, Scott, Alfa Romeo remains unbesmirched.
Yeah, as of now. And, the thing is they're going to compete with BMW and Infiniti and Buick
right.
and well, Ford and GM and all these makers, right? So they're all going to be in this one big category together. And to see an Alfa back in the mix, that's pretty exciting for us here in the U.S.
And I love it.
I think a lot of people are going to buy it. I think they're going to go for this.
I'm not the biggest fan of sedans, for one reason or another, but I would love to do this because when it starts off, what's going to happen is if this takes off, you're going to be able to be a person with a car that people haven't seen in a very long time.
And a car with an undeniable racing heritage.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Tied to that mark. And you just simply haven't been able to get that mark here in the U.S. for a long time unless you're buying an old vehicle.
Mm-hmm.
We're probably talking about it too much. Maybe,
yeah, we're getting close to our Alfa Romeo.
We're
fanboy episode.
Going to turn this thing into the Edsel. I didn't mean to do that.
Oh, no.
Okay, how about, you want to go with another simple one, or do you want to go with a supercar? How about?
No, let's only maybe do one or two other supercars.
Cause okay.
I feel like we can do an episode about any of the supercars coming out because there's going to be so much anticipation just baked into
this. Yeah, we could do a full-on episode about that. So
let's talk about the cars that might be in people's garages.
All right, well, you want to talk about the 2018 Chevrolet Bolt? That's a Bolt with a B.
Yes, not
and,
a
B. And it's like Lightning Bolt. But it runs on electricity.
Yeah.
And as you would guess, and the I guess the target for this thing, now I'm going to question this, though.
Okay.
The target for this is Tesla and Nissan. So they're going to target that category. Now when I look at this, Ben, I mean, I guess I may have to squint a little bit, but I definitely see the Nissan Leaf in this vehicle, but it does have four doors. The Bolt has four doors.
Mm-hmm.
So that's, quite a bit different, really.
Yeah, that's true. Here's my thing, Scott. I know that we are going to see more and more electric vehicles, right? Even with some of the panic over gas prices dissipating, the market has already started to lock in. And when one maker is successful in a piece of the market, then other makers say, oh, people will buy these, so let's make one.
Yeah, right? In addition to the other products that we're going to continue to make.
In addition to the other stuff, exactly. But if it's a fair fight for them to compete with Tesla.
Well, I don't think so either. But what they're saying here is that they want to be the first affordable small vehicle that has a 200-mile range.
Mm-hmm.
And that makes sense. Now, affordable, when they say affordable, the projected price of it right now is slightly less than $40,000. Yeah. And then they always do this. They always say, when you take into account the tax credits that you're going to receive from this vehicle, it's going to bring
real,
it down
the
to
subsidies, yeah.
Yeah, yes and no. You know, it kind of depends on when you buy it.
And what state you live in.
Yeah, and, you know, how many of those tax credits are available, because there's a number, and then that
right.
it's decreasing as it goes up. So if you're among the first to buy it, you'll get the full tax credit. Later, you may get a small amount or not even any at all. Mm-hmm. So be mindful of that. But they do say that it brings it down to around $30,000. And again, a 200-mile range, that's not bad. It's not great. It's not bad. it's a full electric vehicle. So again, you're still not going to be able to make those long distance trips until they finally figure out quick charging. You know, I mean, like really quick, full battery charging from,
right.
And have it be so prolific that you're able to you know, drive with relatively little on your mind as far as, you know, the charging concerns, your range anxiety. Mm-hmm. I would have tremendous range anxiety at this point. You know, the way that, you know, the charging stations are dispersed, and there's no real good solution right now in place. I know that pockets of air, you know, parts of the United States have
sure.
a decent
like you're
system.
Okay in Southern California.
Yeah, exactly. That type of thing. But, you know, until we get something really put in place that is just rock solid, I wouldn't feel too comfortable heading out with an all-electric vehicle on a cross-country trip.
Yeah, I hate to say it, Scott, because I'm excited about the concept. But it's not there now. It may be there. It probably will be there within a few years because Tesla's going like gangbusters.
And you know what? I agree with you. And that's something that 5 years ago we would have, you know, had to go outside and fight about because,
right.
I would have said there's no way. It's just not going to happen. But I'm getting to the point where I'm starting to see what's happening. And yeah, you're right. Tesla's coming up with the quick change stations for the batteries and all that. You know, which is really just a reiteration of an old idea.
Mm-hmm.
But it's one that would work. It really would, but it has to be so, I guess I keep using the word prolific, but I mean, it would have to be on so many street corners.
So widespread.
Just as if, think about how many gas stations you see now that you
right.
can get that anywhere.
Mm-hmm.
Think about how many quick charging stations you've seen today.
Yeah, but also, you know, it would be really instructional for this. And I think it's something we should do. Several people have probably already done it, but it would be instructive to look at the rise and proliferation of gas stations
mm-hmm.
and to see how that was handled. Because, you know, for a long time, some of our younger listeners might not know this from anything but movies, but, there were places in the U.S. where even when I was a kid, you would see a sign that was a warning that this is the last gas station for 100 miles or something.
Yeah, I think those are still out there. You see those in the desert. You see mm-hmm. those in the mountains. You see them, you know, in kind of unforgiving terrains, I guess.
Right. They're probably, for our Australian friends, write in and let us know if those are big in Australia. Because I imagine in the outback.
I would think it'd have to be.
Yeah.
And, you know, another quick thing that I want to mention here, and mm-hmm. I thought this was kind of interesting. On, you know, the website Shorpy. That has a lot of old photographs, vintage photographs.
Yeah.
You can find shots from turn of the century, you know, turn of the 20th century, where cars are still relatively new, you know, requiring gasoline, mm-hmm. and they're selling gasoline by the gallon at drugstores. You would have to park the car on the curb, walk in and buy a gallon of gasoline in a glass container, bring mm-hmm. it out, fill up your car. You know, you buy, three or four or five gallons or whatever for a nickel or whatever it was. And, you'd have to buy it in a store. You'd have to go into like a drugstore and buy it.
Mm-hmm.
So how weird is that? It wasn't even gas stations really at the time. So I know it's possible and it's coming. Will the 2018 Chevy Bolt, be one that, you know, is hitting at just the right time when people are going to say, yeah, I'm going to make the investment in an electric vehicle. This kind of low end vehicle, I guess, really. Cause it's going to be, you know, well, and if you're thinking 8 or 3 years from now, is $30,000 a lot of money for a car? Probably not. I mean, that's the way inflation's going. I mean, it seems like electric cars in particular are getting very expensive. Mm-hmm. I think Tesla's trying to make a move to come back on the price a little bit. But
mm-hmm.
I don't know. Maybe $30,000 isn't a lot to expect out of this small vehicle.
You know, it's weird because you're right that inflation has made a new normal when it comes to price of entry-level price of a vehicle.
Yeah, I suppose so. I mean, this whole thing is it's likely a derivative of the Spark EV,
mm-hmm.
The way they have the direct gearbox and all that stuff. So I don't know. It seems like it's possible for them to do this, actually come out with this in 2018. But again, it's a car that's 3 years out at this point. So
yeah,
another one of those. Is it going to happen? Is it not going to happen? What might go wrong? There's quite a bit of things.
Let's do another car for the people.
All right. What do you got?
What do you think about that Honda Ridgeline, my friend?
I'm looking at a photograph of it right now because that's the one I wanted to talk about too. All right, this is interesting. I really like the older Honda Ridgeline. I think a lot of people did because it sold really well initially, right?
Yeah.
But then Honda kind of just let this product kind of die off. They didn't do a whole lot with it. They didn't change it a lot.
Wither on the vine.
Yeah, exactly. And it was around for, what, about a decade, I think.
Mm-hmm.
But it did just kind of, as you say, just kind of withered and just went away. It softly went away. So they're going to bring it back.
Well, here's the thing, too. For a lot of younger drivers, too, you don't think of – you don't think of a pickup when you think of Honda.
No. But this is kind of a mix of the two, right? I mean, it's sort of like what we saw with the Rampage, only the Rampage is actually based on a Dakota truck.
Right.
But it has a similar look, I guess, with that small bed in the back and I guess, what would you call it in this? Would you call it a crew cab? Because it has a second set of doors. It has a rear seat. But it does have that small bed. I don't know. It's almost like a bigger.
I know you hate the word.
You mean a unibody?
All right. Simmer down. I think there's a good argument to make there. It's got kind of this, those unibody crossovers have been doing so well.
Yeah.
In terms of sales that, the Ridgeline has, I think it has a little bit of that in there.
That's fine. I mean, it's based on a car.
Sure.
So, of course, that's what it's going to have. It's not going to have an old frame setup. I mean, that's getting pretty old school, I think, really, at this point. Some of the bigger trucks still have that and they're hanging on to that, but most vehicles now are unibody, it seems. Anyways, when we read about them. The powertrain is going to be, what was it coming from the Pilot, I think, the Honda Pilot from 2016, the direct injected 3.5 liter V6 with a 6-speed automatic. I think there's also going to be a 4-wheel drive system in place, so it'll have 4-wheel drive, but close to 300 horsepower.
Mm-hmm.
Not bad. I would guess it'd have, a decent amount of torque for towing.
Sure.
Pulling the boat or whatever you need to do.
And the price is right.
It's not a heavy-duty truck by any means or anything like that. It never was intended to be. But it has the capability, the utility that people need often, just to carry something a little bigger than what would fit inside a sedan or a small utility vehicle.
So are you a fan? You're a fan.
I am a fan of this one, yeah. And you know what? I got to say I'm a fan of the original. The rendering of the 2017 that I've seen, not necessarily a fan. It has, it almost looks just like a giant car. It looks like a big car.
Yeah. Okay. Here's my thing. I might sound a little bit old school with this, Scott, but.
You go full curmudgeon on me here.
The small pickup truck
beds
don't make sense to me. I'm not angry about them. I'm just not going to get one because for me, even a mid-sized pickup that's a true pickup has a decent bed. You can haul stuff in there. And this is a compromise between an open-air trunk and a true pickup.
Well, I'm going to ballpark this. I'm going to guess that this Ridgeline has about a 4-foot bed. And on the small pickups that you're talking about, you typically get a choice between a 6-foot and an 8-foot bed. And you prefer the 8-foot beds probably.
Yeah,
right?
I would. Well, I mean, even 6 is okay, but yeah, I prefer the 8-foot because think of what a pickup truck is supposed to be used for.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sorry, I can feel the irritation growing here on my part. But think of what a pickup truck is supposed to be used for and then look at a 4-foot bed and ask yourself, right? If you're hauling, construction materials, right? Long slats of wood or plywood.
What are you going to put in a half a piece of plywood?
Right. What are you going to do? Cut it in half and then just gorilla glue it back and hope for the best?
And obviously you can tie it in and make it work and all that.
You can tie it at a crap angle and tie it down and
off the back. You mean the tail
gingerly.
You're talking about tailgate up, right?
So yeah,
can,
yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
Got it. I understand.
Or you can knock. Well, maybe you could knock the tailgate down if it's not that big. If you're also a lot of people use pickup trucks for moving, right? There are some people who only ever see a pickup truck or drive one when they are borrowing their buddies because they're moving.
Well, maybe that's the thing. You can have this and have a little bit of the capability of a pickup truck. You know, if you do need to move one dresser somewhere, but if somebody wants you to actually help them move, like move from an apartment to an apartment.
Sure.
Maybe they won't even ask you.
Now, I'm not going to knock it.
Maybe that's a benefit.
I'm not going to knock it if that's your thing and those are the capabilities you need.
Yeah.
If you have some sort of situation where you say, you know what I really need is just 4 feet of open air space.
Okay.
Then that's fine and go with God, dude. But best of luck to you. I'm just saying for me, it doesn't work. It seems like a compromise in a way that, in a way that's a lose-lose situation.
Okay, but you know what? This has been tried many, many times before. Of course, the Ridgeline, you know, they had a bigger bet, I think.
It did have a slightly bigger bet.
It seemed like it had a bigger bet.
Yeah.
Anyways, by the photos, anyways. And I don't have the specs on this newest one, but think about like the, wasn't there Ford Explorer Sport Track that had a small pickup truck bed in the back? What about that Hummer that had that really tiny pickup truck bed in the back?
Don't even get me started. Look, okay, so I'm all about multifunctional stuff, Scott. I like it.
Yeah.
I don't even buy appliances in a kitchen that only do one thing. You know what I mean? Partially because I have a tiny kitchen.
You're a Swiss Army kind of guy.
Yes, exactly. Thank you. I've never heard it put that way. That is exactly it. And so it means life. If I'm saying that it's not going to work, it's not going to work for me.
So you're like, I'm going to get that cappuccino maker, but it also better be able to make sandwiches.
And do math.
All right, so I get it. I understand there's limited capability with it, but it does give you the option to carry some bigger things. I mean, that's about the best way to put it. And I'm not trying to sell
it. And
a lot
of other people liked it, as evidenced by the initial Ridgeline.
And this is about 1 year out, so around 2016, these are going to start arriving as 2017 model years. You can look at them on the showroom floor, make your own decision, but prices starting right around $30,000, according to Honda.
Right, so the price is great.
Yeah, $30,000. We're not talking about the $500,000 Lamborghini Esteron, which is a 900 horsepower hybrid, as they call it, rocket ship, which is really kind of Lamborghini saying, we can do this too, really.
Yeah.
That's what it is to me. It seems like it's really just a move to get it into the same hybrid supercar market as LaFerrari and Porsche 918, the McLaren P1, some of the other supercars that are going hybrid.
The name is really interesting. I love this tidbit of trivia from one of the authors that we were reading during research. The Asteron is named from the original Minotaur from Greek mythology.
Oh, you know what? That's clever.
That's very clever. Because you guys know Lambos are usually named after bulls.
Yeah.
Right? They have to be named after bulls. That's one of the rules. And a Minotaur, of course, being a hybrid of a man and a bull, for a hybrid car.
Very, very clever. I like that. They've taken it to the stars.
Yeah, I feel like they're listening to our show and learning a little bit about puns. No, I'm just kidding.
No, that's really, I mean, honestly, that's very, very smart on their part. Somebody really thought about that. Now, this is an 897 horsepower combined package that you'll get for this whole thing. It's the Hurricane 602 horsepower 5.2 liter V10 that is paired to an electric motor, actually two electric motors that are in the front wheel. So electric motors in the front, you got the gasoline engine powering the rear wheels, for an all-wheel drive setup. Very impressive. The problem, as we mentioned earlier, ballpark $500,000. Now they're saying that there's a chance that this may be priced around $200,000.
Doubt it.
I also doubt that. When they give you a range of $200,000 to $500,000, you pretty much know where the Lamborghini is going to fall in that scale.
I don't think they're going to surprise everyone and say, actually, guys, it's going to be $173,000.
I don't think so.
I doubt that.
No, and how about this? Do you want to keep going with this, or do you want to maybe kind of start to wrap it up?
I think we should start to wrap it up. Noel has given us nigh, and,
All right. Here's the one I was talking about earlier. Now, this article was written in May of 2015, right?
Yes.
And this is the one I was hinting at earlier on.
Here we are.
Volkswagen has a special model that they're going to come out with in 2017. And I think that, as I said, they're on the right side of this. I was worried when I first read this list that it was going to say it's going to be powered by a TDI engine. And we know what's going on with all that. We just talked about that.
Right.
If not, listen to Forward Thinking, listen to Tech Stuff, because we talked about it there. All right. So This is a car that they call the 2017 Volkswagen Beetle Dune. So the Dune edition of this car is kind of what you would expect. It's like the Baja version of the Bug. Remember the old Baja Bugs from back then, the Super Beetles, you know, those cars that were lifted up and kind of cool looking. It's a similar version of that. It's the modern take on that, I guess. Not quite to the extreme that the older ones were, but similar. It's a little bit wider. It's got, you know, flared fenders. It's a little bit taller. It also has additional ground clearance, so it's got bigger wheels, bigger diameter wheels.
Got those flared fenders too.
Yeah, very cool. I like flared fenders. Has a 210 horsepower, 2-liter direct injected turbo 4-cylinder engine. Now that's the good news because they didn't go with the TDI on this one. Mm-hmm. I think at this point they would have shifted it if they hadn't anyways. They would have, decided that that's not what they're gonna do.
Well, here's one thing though about it.
Yeah.
So it looks like it can go off-road.
It does.
It is a front-wheel drive. No four-wheel drive version is planned.
All right. Well, people are going to not like that.
That's going to be a negative. I think they should change that.
Yeah. I mean, it has that stance. It has a four-wheel drive stance for sure. I mean, have you noticed this? When you're on the road and you see a vehicle that has, you know, the X designation on the back of it, usually in their name, it's an all-wheel drive vehicle. They usually have a higher stance. They sit up a little bit more. There's a little bit more clearance between the wheels and the body. That's sort of like what this is doing. They've gone bigger wheels on this one, so it's a little different for the concept, but, higher stance typically shows you that it's an all-wheel drive vehicle in that lineup. And, this one definitely has that, but it's not giving up the goods, Ben. There's no better way to say it. I think people are going to be disappointed in the fact that it's not all-wheel drive. I don't know why they wouldn't do that.
Yeah.
I mean, cost, of course.
Well, yeah, cost. And also, I'm fully aware of my dismissive tone where I say, I think they should just change that.
Yeah. Well, we know what that takes, right? It takes a lot of money. I mean, we're talking hundreds of millions of dollars to shift over to a brand new driveline of a vehicle, probably.
And especially,
ballparking it.
Especially if it's aiming to be in the high $20,000 range.
Yeah. Okay. So
I don't know if you can do that.
Well, see, that's the thing. They probably had a price point in mind and said, we're going to offer this special package that looks this way. And this is what we're going to price it at. If they were to do it the other way and say, here's what we're going to build is an all wheel drive Beetle with this engine, this drivetrain setup that's all wheel drive.
Yeah.
And it's going to look this way. It's going to have this package, this interior package or whatever. And then we'll figure out the cost after that. It's going to end up being a $40,000 Volkswagen Beetle.
Right.
And who's going to buy that, I guess? I mean, I know it's kind of a special edition. This is like a Dune edition, but, I don't know. People are going to be interested in it just because it's a special edition, probably.
Sure, but I am skeptical given that it is supposed to be a four-wheel drive vehicle.
Yeah. I mean, they're implying that with the Dune name right there. They're making it look like it's that.
It's lifted. It's got the flares. Yeah. It's got those fat tires.
Yeah, I guess in a way it's talking the talk, but it's not walking the walk, right?
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. Exactly.
All right, so there's a couple more that I want to just laundry list because I feel they need like an honorable mention. We don't have a lot of details on them, but I feel like I need to say them because otherwise we're going to get angry letters.
Yes.
All right, so how about the 2016 MX-5 Miata? Now, I know that one's already out, but I have yet to see one on the road. So I'm going to count that one as not really being out yet. People are anticipating it. And it's a 2016 model, too.
Right.
All right, so I'm counting that one.
Okay.
What about the 2016 or maybe 2017 Subaru BRZ STI edition? That's exciting.
That is exciting.
So an STI BRZ, I think that's going to be really cool. People are going to really like that one. There's going to be a 2016... Hyundai model that's coming out called the Santa Cruz. Now you're not going to like this one, I guess, because it's kind of like that Subaru Brat-like design.
Yeah.
Again, small pickup truck bed on the back, but to me, look up the Hyundai Santa Cruz from 2016. I think it's different. It looks a little different. We already mentioned the Ridgeline.
I've said my piece.
There is a 2020 Mercedes-Benz pickup truck that's on the way.
And
that shouldn't surprise us, but it does because they've never really been in the midsize pickup range.
Mm-mm.
But I don't know why because they have some fantastic commercial vehicles that they've done all along the way. Why not make that you know, branch off into the midsize pickup range? They could even do heavy duty pickup trucks if they wanted to.
They could.
With the Mercedes line, but they're not doing it. And then maybe the last one that I want to mention, Ben, the stupid Honda NSX. Now I call it stupid because it's driving me crazy what's going on with the lead up to this whole thing. Mm-hmm. This started back in 2007.
Yeah.
And I started talking about it.
Hey, it might come out at some point.
Well, it's scheduled to come out very, very soon. So it maybe even like during while this podcast is airing, right?
Everybody, I want you guys to hear my air quotation marks when I say this to Scott. Scheduled.
Yeah. How much hype have we heard about the Acura NSX? And this makes my point completely, Ben, about the lead up and the
goes back to the beginning of our show.
Yeah, the loss of interest in this car.
Yeah,
I was super jacked about this car.
It's true.
Back in 2007, and all the way through. And I'll be honest, for the next 5 years until they showed it to us in 2012, they finally brought out the concept vehicle, I think, at the International Auto Show, North American International Auto Show in Detroit in 2012. And, of course, media is going crazy about it. It's a fantastic thing, and it's going to be great whenever it's coming out. We're 3 years later now. We're still waiting for this thing. This is a long, drawn-out launch of this vehicle. I mean, how far has it been now? We're approaching 10 years before we're actually seeing this thing on the road or in the dealership. I think that the momentum that they had in 2012 is completely lost.
I mean, agree.
People are excited, sure, but it's not the frenzy. It's not the media frenzy that was going on in 2012 about it, because celebrities were talking about it. People were entering contests to be able to be the first to purchase one.
Mm-hmm.
Behind, I think it was behind Jerry Seinfeld, because he's going to get the first one. If that still holds true, that was 4 years ago when we were talking about that.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. What do you think? And maybe the listeners can chime in on this too.
Yeah, listeners, let us know what you think. I'll be honest with you, Scott. I think that nothing can kill something more quickly than hype.
Yeah.
Especially hype over an extended amount of time.
Ford Edsel again, right? I mean, they overhype it. But the thing is, I firmly believe this car will deliver when it arrives. It's just that, like, I think people are going to see it and say, like, oh, that's that NSX they were talking about a decade ago.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and it just seems like there's still interest in it. I'm still excited about it, but not as excited as I was, you know, 3-5 years ago, maybe even, or even mm-hmm. 7 years ago or 10 years ago. It's just not the same.
Yeah, that's true. And maybe, who knows, maybe this will barnstorm all expectations and maybe all will be forgiven. But we'll see. I feel a little burned, man. I've been looking forward to that one for a long time. We talked off air about it.
Well, you know that we're going to see a few around the Atlanta area here with the types of cars that people drive in the Buckhead region and downtown Atlanta. I feel strongly that we're going to see a few on the road very soon, as soon as they come out, as a matter of fact.
Mm-hmm. So let's hope for the best, you guys, and be prepared for another wait if necessary. We hope you enjoyed this episode. We got a skedaddle.
Yeah, definitely.
And we didn't get, of course, to all the anticipated cars of 2016. We didn't mention the McLaren P14, a.k.a. the Junior P1.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think we got to...
We didn't even talk about the Civic Type R, really. But we have a whole episode on that one.
We do. So let us know right in on Facebook or Twitter, where we are CarStuffHSW, to tell us your most anticipated cars of 2016. You can also check out every podcast we've ever done.
Oh, can I mention one more?
On CarStuffShow.com. Yeah, what is it?
Oh, I have to.
Okay,
What is it? And
it,
even if the listeners just look it up on their own, there is going to be a 2017 Jeep Grand Cherokee called the Trackhawk.
Oh, yeah.
That is going to have the Hellcat engine in it. In a Jeep Grand Cherokee.
Thing.
It's a real thing. So take a look at that one. I'm sorry we didn't get to that one.
No, yeah, I'm sorry.
Maybe
we should just open up our next episode just real quick with ones that, like, let's do, here it is. Wait, hear me out though. Let's do listener mail at the beginning of our next episode so we can get these other anticipated cars of 2016 out before too much time has passed.
Yeah, because they'll already be launched at that.
Because otherwise they'll all be launched at that.
Yeah,
point.
Yeah.
Sound good?
We'll try to remember that. How about
okay.
that?
Okay, we'll try to remember.
I'll do my best.
I will make a post-it note and stick it somewhere and make sure that it specifically says something I'll remember. Because I'm terrible about leaving vague post-it notes for myself.
Mm-hmm.
I'll find stuff that I found one that said, pho in a burrito, no one must know.
Hmm.
I think I was trying to invent a new kind of burrito that had that Vietnamese soup in it.
Yeah.
Whatever. This talk about tangent. I've had way too much coffee. We're going to head out. Write to us. Let us know what your most anticipated car of the next few years is. Bonus points if they're sooner rather than later. And you can write to us directly. Our email is
carstuff@howstuffworks.com.
more on this and thousands of other topics, visit HowStuffWorks.com. Let us know what you think. Send an email to podcast@HowStuffWorks.com.